Newcastle and the Hunters at 2NURFM 103.7. Amanda McCreed with you on this Wednesday, August 6th. And today marks 80 years since the atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima. That was followed just days later by the bombing of Nagasaki and then victory in the Pacific on August 15, bringing World War II to its dramatic end. To help us better understand these historic events, we're joined by military historian and battlefield guide Matt McLaughlin. Good morning.
Good morning, Amanda.
Great to talk to you. Matt, can you talk us through the lead up to the dropping of the atomic bomb on Hiroshima and why was the bombing such a pivotal moment in world history?
Well, it's a fascinating moment, and it's one that we've spent decades debating and analysing and arguing about. And I think we actually sometimes have a misleading impression of what was going on in 1945 and why this decision was made. So casting our minds back then, on the 8th of May, Germany had surrendered and that part of the Second World War had come to an end, the war in Europe, but the fighting was still continuing in a very bloody fashion in the Pacific, and it was America that was taking the lead. So Australia was certainly involved and the rest of the Allies were involved, but America was taking the lead on these huge battles that were designed to defeat Japan. And so in early 1945, we saw the invasion of the island of Iwo Jima, which was a very costly action that the Americans had to go through. And then we saw an even huger battle in April to take the Japanese island of Okinawa. And what was becoming clear was that the Japanese weren't going to surrender and that they were going to fight basically until the entire nation had been annihilated. Mm. And the reason we knew this is that we had broken the Japanese codes and could read their diplomatic communications and could see that they weren't intending to surrender. And what the Japanese were intending to do was have one gigantic last battle on the main islands of Japan. And they were arming civilians and telling school children to blow up tanks. And it was going to be absolutely horrific and bloody. So that combination of knowing that the Japanese weren't going to surrender and also knowing that they were planning this huge battle on the Japanese home islands led the Americans to make the decision to drop the atomic bombs. And in hindsight, I think it was the right decision to end that war as quickly as possible.
Well, the dropping of the atomic bomb on Hiroshima was followed just days later by the atomic bombing of Nagasaki. What was the thinking behind these two bombings so close together?
Well, the Americans only had two bombs was the first thing to remember about it. And there was a reluctance to use them. They knew what this was going to do, particularly to civilians. But they also knew that the Japanese were not going to surrender and they had to do everything they could to end the war. So they were hopeful that the Japanese would see the destruction of Hiroshima on the 6th of August and would then surrender. So they dropped the bomb. Hundreds of thousands of people were killed. The entire city was completely destroyed. But then again, listening in to Japanese diplomatic communications, the Japanese position was, well, the Americans can't have that many bombs. They've probably only got two or three. So we can put up with two or three of our cities being destroyed and the war will continue.
Wow.
And so they realized that the Japanese were going to fight on. And so they authorized the use of a second bomb to make the point that that they were going to keep dropping these bombs until Japan was completely destroyed. Even after both bombs had been dropped, the military leaders of Japan still wanted to continue the war. They said, let's not surrender, let's keep fighting. And it took a personal intervention from the emperor himself, who went on the radio and announced that the fighting couldn't continue to actually end the war. So it's just remarkable to think, and often when we look back, we get it quite wrong that we think the Japanese were on the brink of surrender. They just weren't. They were going to fight until every Japanese person was dead. So the bombings, as horrific as they were, saved millions of lives, both on the Allied and the Japanese side.
Can you give us a sense of the human cost, both immediate and long-term, in Hiroshima and Nagasaki?
Yeah, absolutely. I will do that, but we should also look at it in the broader context as well of what was going on. So about between 150 and 250,000 people were killed in Hiroshima and potentially another 60 to 90,000 in Nagasaki. So the numbers are, you know, horrendous. So probably somewhere around 250,000 people were killed in total. Most of those were civilians. So it's absolutely horrific, and we should state that as a fact. Atomic weapons against civilians is obviously a low point in human history, but we should also remember that in Asia, under Japanese occupation, they estimate that between 200 and 400,000 civilians a month were dying under Japanese occupation in Asia. There's also the factor that the Japanese were intending to use civilians for the defense of the home islands. I mean, no death is more important than another. But when you look at the whole picture of just the millions of people that were dying throughout that war, Something had to be done to stop the Japanese from fighting. And in fact, Japanese people today who survived the bombings, there's been a number of interviews that have come out this week, and Japanese people who survived the bombings look back with anger, but generally not at the Americans for dropping the bombs, but at the Japanese government for refusing to surrender and leading Japan into that terrible situation. So it's all horrendous. I mean, this is all awful that we have to use this accounting, but I think we should understand that the bombings did end the war, and because of that, they saved millions of lives.
So that was what I was going to ask you. Yeah, so that finally led to the end of the war on August 15, 1945. What role did Australia play?
It's an interesting one for Australia because we'd been a little bit sidelined by the Americans during the war in the Pacific. So while the Americans were leading these invasions of the Japanese islands, Australia was fighting in places like Bougainville and Borneo and New Guinea. So those battles were very, very important, but they weren't the frontline battles to take the islands of Japan back from the Japanese. But the Australians were slated to be very heavily involved in the invasion of Japan, which was supposed to take place in spring 1946. So, of course, no one knew about the atomic bombs, so no one realised that the war was going to end in 1945. So the expectation was that in the spring of 1946, a huge Allied force, of which Australia would play a major part, would invade Japan. And it's just ghastly to think of what that would have meant for Australia had we had all of our troops fighting in Japan against the Japanese. It just would have been, by far, our highest casualties of the war would have occurred in 1946. So thank goodness that didn't occur.
Yeah, well, as we mark these anniversaries throughout August, it's a good time to pause and reflect on the cost of war. Matt McLaughlin, thank you so much for talking to us.
Thanks, Amanda.
Thank you. This is 2NURFM.